you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you, I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you, we're glad you're here.
Reading from Mark chapter 6, verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. That was Mark chapter 6, verse 45. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Monday, June 22nd, 2026. Welcome to today's edition of Mark and Friends, as Pastor Jason Epperson continues our study through the Gospel of Mark as we look at Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 56. In a world filled with fear, uncertainty, and countless distractions, we're reminded that the answer is not found in a formula, but in a person, Jesus Christ. Let's open up God's Word together. Here's Pastor Jason Epperson of CU Church.
So today we're in Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 56. And in this passage today, the question that you're going to have to ask, it's the question that I'm going to have to ask is, do I really believe he's God? Because if I really believe Jesus is God, let's discover who he is and how he interacts with us. Is that all right? So the passage, it starts this way. It says, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before the other side. So this is what's just happened. Jesus just found out, like the day before, Jesus finds out he lost his best friend. His best friend, John the Baptist, the only one that kind of knew who he was. Remember, John was the one that baptized him. John's the one that's like, I can't even tie your sandals. John is the one that when he was literally inside of his mom, the Holy Spirit came on him. When Mary came walking up and it was like, bam, that's God. So John, from the very beginning, if there's one person that walked the earth besides Jesus that really understood who Jesus was, it was John. So like, it was his dude. Are you with me? You can nod your heads on that. It's like, in your world too, it might not have been his mom, his dad, it might not have been even his sibling, it was his cousin, but it was someone that got him as much as anyone could get him. And John was killed. We talked about that. John that cut his head off. It was an awful situation. Herod was a part of it. Jesus finds out about the death of his best friend. And what's he say to people? He's like, hey, I need a little space. I need some time to be with my father. I want to go pray. In the process of him wanting to go pray, what happens? Thousands of people show up. And then what does he do? He has compassion on the thousands of people. He feeds the 5,000. Then after he feeds the 5,000, we find him in this moment. He has fed them, like, and they are still in shock of like, how did he feed this many of us when he had a lunchbox of food? And then it tells us in this passage is the next moment. And so don't forget this. In this moment, Jesus is tired, y'all. He's tired. He's worn out. He's emotionally drained. And this is what it says. Immediately he made his disciples get in the boat and go before him to the other side. So why does he make them do it? I just give you that backstory. You might think, well, he needs to be alone. He tells him to get out of here. Nope. That's not why. In the book of John, it tells us why he made them go to the other side. He went to the other side because after he fed the 5,000, those 5,000 people wanted to pick up swords and clubs and they wanted to make him king. Hear me say this. Jesus is on this earth for the salvation of humanity, not just for your political affiliation. Like in this moment, Jesus says, hey, go to the other side, because yes, he needs to spend time with the Father, but he also needs to make sure I can't be distracted from my primary purpose. Another way we see it in Scripture is Jesus talks about the lost sheep, and he's willing to leave the what? Leave the 99 to go after the one. The purpose of Jesus wasn't to make the 99 happy. The purpose of Jesus was for all of his children to be what? Saved. It goes on and says this. To Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd and after he had taken leave on them, he went up on the mountain to pray. So then Jesus goes up on the mountain to pray. When Jesus is stressed, when Jesus is overwhelmed, when Jesus is tired, where does Jesus go? To be with his Father. That's my first question for the day. Where do you go? Who do you turn to? What do you gaze on? Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like if the creator of the universe, so one thing we need to know about who God is, like this is where we're talking about Jesus today. We know who God is God desires to spend time with his people, even when he's stressed. So where do you look? Where do you turn? Do you turn to a numbing device that you have in your hand and scroll? You don't have to nod your head. You can blink your eyes. Do you turn to a game that you watch? Do you turn to a club that you grab? Do you turn to a weight? Do you turn to a run? Do you turn to a friend? Do you turn to food? Do you turn to drink? Do you turn to something you smoke? Something you... I don't know where we turn, but I know where Jesus turned. And where he turned was to this Father. And I just want you to know that in a hard moment, where you turn matters, because where you turn is where you're fueled. Who fuels you? Do you know when we do marriages, sometimes I do ceremonies, and I get two people standing in front of me. I came over here because I'm standing by a cross. If you didn't, like, it wasn't just Jason randomly walks around. No, I'm over here now. That, and you guys are falling asleep. You guys are locked in. Stay here with me. We're carrying over here, guys. I'm sorry. But I got a couple in front of me. I've told you guys this before. And when couples come in front of me or they say, hey, I want to get married, or they want to do this. And really sometimes you wonder, do you really want to get married, or do you want to have a party? Do you really want to get married? Do you really like, I mean, literally, I think those things in my head sometimes, and sometimes they come out of my mouth. Then they say, I don't think we want you to do our wedding. They're like, okay, that's okay. Good luck. But when they're standing in front of me, I always say, I literally, if I ever do your wedding, I promise you I'm going to say this. And lots of couples that I know love each other a lot. And they're like, oh, this is like Disney. And they're like so excited. It's like, this isn't Disney. But then in this moment, I say this, and I'm going to say it to you, because it's not just about marriage, it's about life. I know you love each other a ton. There might be no couple that's ever stood before me that loves each other more than you two. That could be the case. But I promise you, the love you have for inside of you is not enough. And then they're like, that's not what someone says to Cinderella. I ain't no fairy godmother, sister. And we all laugh in the room because we know this to be true, right? You can nod your heads. You know that to be true, but my question is, do you know the answer to the problem? See, the answer to the problem is the only fuel in this world that makes love last is the creator of love. We understand when you work out, you need to drink water. We understand that when you get in a car and you go for a drive, whether it's electric or it's gas, you got to stop at some point and put more fuel in the tank. And I'm telling you right now, lots of us in this room, we're running on empty, and we're turning to phones, we're turning to food, we're turning to exercise, we're turning to friends, we're turning to emotional things that we're doing online that we shouldn't be doing, or things that's where we're turning. And the reality is there's only one thing that actually can refill your tank, and you can be the person you're created to be, and it's the one who created you. And that's who I'm talking about right here, y'all. So just let's lock in. And when evening came, the boat was out to sea, and he was all alone on the land, and he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against him. So he tells these guys, don't miss this. This matters, because some of our view of God is absolutely screwed up, okay? So what I want to tell you is I'm telling you who God is right now. So if you believe different than this moment, like either this passage is wrong, I'm wrong, or maybe you're wrong. But in this moment, what happens is Jesus tells them, hey, you three, I need you to get in the boat and we need to go to the other side. And you're like, Jesus told me to, we're going to do it. And then you get in the boat and you start rowing. The wind's blowing against you. The next thing you know, your hands are blistered, your hands are bloody, you're tired, you didn't bring enough snacks, even though you just fed 5,000 people, you didn't pack any extra. And you're thinking, well, God told me to do this. Why is this so hard? Do you know most people lose faith because they actually believe if they do the right thing, good things will always happen. And when good things don't happen, they don't believe in him. The reason we lose our faith is we have the wrong expectations of who God is. Now, he's about to have compassion on him. Don't like, oh, he's angry. He ain't angry. He loves him. But sometimes it's hard. If it was hard for Jesus, God himself, who never made a mistake, do you think it's always going to be easy for us? I'm also not telling you, students, young people, if you actually do the things God tells you to do on this earth, I do believe you have the greatest chance of success on this earth. I'm not dismissing that concept. But I'm telling you, sometimes you do the right thing. You say the right thing. You love people the right way, and people still say things about you that aren't true. It's still hard. You can't row. You just feel like you're going nowhere. One of my best friends in the whole world in January got sick. He got sick. They tried to figure it out. 3 months later, he's got like a growth on his brain, and it's pressing on his spinal cord. He can't move his legs. This is a pastor of a church. He preaches, he teaches, he exercises. He does the right things. And he's still laying in a hospital bed, an extreme nerve pain in his legs. But because he knows who God is, he's not questioning his faith. His faith is the only thing that gives him peace. I have other people in this world that I know that they're experiencing hard times right now, and those hard times are crushing them because they believe their whole lives that when you do good, good happens. And that does happen sometimes, but sometimes life's just hard. And in the hardship, y'all, the next part of the passage, it really matters. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. That's so cool, by the way. I mean, just imagine being like, man, they're really struggling. I'll go get them. Like, he's God, y'all. It's not like, call an Uber. No, brother just walked on the water. I just don't want you to miss the majesty of who he is, though. Like, he created it. He sustains it. He holds it together. And he's like, yeah, my boys, they're struggling. I'll go walk out there. Do you know in Job chapter 9, verse 8, it tells us that the majesty of God walks on water? Pretty cool, huh? He meant to pass by them, but when he saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. So these guys are seeing him. He's walking by. They get scared. They think it's a ghost. But immediately he spoke to them, and this is what he said. Hey, guys, take heart. It's I. Don't be afraid. And then it says this, and he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased. Do you think when they were rowing, Peter was like, man, the last time we were in a storm listening to Jesus, he was sleeping in the boat. This time we're rowing, there's a storm, and the brother's not even with us. See, this is the moment in all the other Gospels when it tells this story. It tells the story of Peter then walking on the water. And most times you've heard this sermon, you've heard, keep your eyes on Jesus. And you should keep your eyes on Jesus. But the problem is, whenever we talk about ourselves in a passage, we lose the main point of the passage. And the main point of the passage is, God has the ability to walk on water. God has compassion on his people. And hear me say this, no matter what circumstance you're in, he'll get in the boat with you. No matter what your circumstance, no matter how bad it is, he gets it. He walks on water, he creates the universe, and he gets me. And he cares enough, even though he's tired, even though he wants to be alone, to take time to be with me. Hey, family, I know we turn to other people, and other people can teach us and show us Jesus. I get that. Me too. But there is no person on this earth that understands you like the one who created you. And you might think, well, Jesus doesn't understand what it is to do this or to be this, or he was never this. And the truth is, Jesus had lots of hard things happen to him. But you might be right. Jesus didn't know in that moment what guilt felt like or shame felt like. But guess what this did? When Jesus went to a cross, he literally became a curse. He became the abuser, and he became the abused. He became the people that did shameful things, and he became shame itself. When he was on this cross, the reason he can get into your circumstance, no matter what it is, he can get into it is, he literally felt it, conquered it, and defeated it. And he wants to be with you in it. And that is not me saying that every time he gets in the boat, it doesn't mean the wind stops right away. It doesn't mean the waves stop right away. What it does mean, though, is he is with us in the storm. A phrase that I've been saying a lot the last 6 months is, God, I'm surrendering this pain to you because you're with me in it. And I'm also saying, Lord, I'm surrendering this success with me because you're with me in it. Either way, it's his. It goes on and says this. And they were utterly astounded, for they didn't understand about the loaves. So, like, literally in their brain, he's walking on water, and they're like, he walks on water? And how did we get that food? You can tell it's a bunch of dudes, right? It's like, man, but how did this happen? How did we get these loaves? And then in this verse, I underlined it in my Bible, it says these words. But their hearts were hardened When they crossed over, they came to the land of the Gennesaret and moored to the shore. But their hearts were hardened. That's why they couldn't understand it. Okay, I'm going to break this down for you really quick. Lots of times in this room with lots of you, and if this is your first time, I'm going to give you a quick recap. We talk about the hardening of hearts, don't we? We talked about it in Exodus with Moses. We've talked about it in the New Testament. And here's one way our hearts are hardened. That in my life, I have a desire. That desire is not a godly desire. I have non-godly desires when I'm not connected and I'm not connection to the Spirit of God. See, when I'm walking in the Spirit of God, I don't have the desires that I have when I'm not connected to the Spirit of God. Did you catch that? Because that's a real thing. And then when I have this desire, if I'm tempted then by that desire, and then I have a choice, am I going to give in to my temptation? And when I give in to the temptation, I'm going to sin? Or am I going to listen to the Spirit of God that's whispering and you're saying, Jason, don't do it. Jason, don't do it. But the more I do it, the more, not just me, I'm not going to pick on just me. The more we do it, the first time we do it, what happens? The word's conviction. But the more we ignore the conviction, the easier it is to do it the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth time. And then eventually, our hearts are hardened to the point we aren't even what? Convicted. That's one way your heart is hardened. But right here, is that what's happening? No, their hearts aren't hardened because this is why their hearts are hardened here. Here's another aspect of the hardening of our hearts. Sometimes the hardening of our hearts is maybe not a blatant big rock sin that we like to remove and feel good about ourselves when they're gone. Sometimes the hardening of our heart is this. We hear the Spirit of God calling us to do something and we're like, I'll later. It might not be a conviction. It might be an encouragement. And the more I don't listen to Him to do the little things, even if I'm not certain, the willingness to try, the willingness to journey, the willingness to have a relationship that I don't always understand. But when I don't do that over periods of times, then my heart becomes what? Hard. It's when you walk in a room and you're compelled to go say hi to someone. It's when you are in your house and you're compelled to pray for someone. I'll do that later. I'll do this now. Or you're sitting like, sometimes it's blatant. It's like, I know I'm not supposed to do this. The Bible tells me I'm not supposed to do this. And your heart is hardened. But most of the time for our hearts, they're hardened because we're just not connected to who He is. He's in our boat, but we're still looking at the waves. It's like a slow fade. Are you with me? In my Bible, actually on my piece of paper that has the Bible on it, because I still can't look down very good because of my neck, I wrote this. I'm going to read this to you again. And they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. And literally when I first read that passage, what I wrote down was this. Watch out, Jason. I wasn't thinking about y'all. Watch out, Jason. You can preach. Watch out, Jason. You can teach. Watch out, Jason. You can serve. You can do the hospital calls. You can do this. Watch out, Jason. You can love your kids. Watch out, Jason. You can coach. Watch out, Jason. You can do all those things. Watch out, Jason. But if you're not listening to me, and I'm not the reason you're doing those things, my heart gets hard pretty fast doing good things or bad things. Hey guys, this is what we need to learn. The God of all creation wants a relationship with you. And then they got out of the boat, and people immediately recognized him and ran about the whole region and began to bring the sick people on their beds to wherever they heard he was. So they started bringing the sick people. They got to the other side. They brought them in. And why did they bring them? Because they knew, they actually believed this. They actually believed that Jesus was God. They actually believed that Jesus was the one that could heal their marriage. Jesus was the one that was the best one to lead their families. Jesus was the best one to lead their teams. Jesus was the best one to lead their businesses. Jesus was the one to pick them up out of their addictions. They actually believed that Jesus was it. And then it ends this way. Can you imagine how cool that'd be, though? It wasn't that they ran up and said, teach us, or we want this from you. They just brought the sick people. And wherever he came in the villages and the cities and the countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and implored him that he might even touch the fringe of his garment. And as many as touched his garment and were around him, they were made well. Guys, I love this passage. You know why I love this passage so much? It's not about us. One thing I need to talk to you about is what happens in your life and in my life, and it's on accident, but it happens, is what if this would have happened? What if Jesus would have gotten off the boat and the first person that came would have run up and put their person who's sick on a cot, and they would have put their person on the cot, and Jesus walks by and that person was healed, and that person ran away, and this is what the person said: Jesus just healed my son. Well, what did you need to do? Well, what did you do? Well, this is what I did. I brought my son on this cot. We had two people carry him. We brought him to the cot. We didn't cross the curb because we didn't want to infringe on Jesus. And we put him down on the curb, and then I got on my knees and well, did you have any money? Yeah, I had some money in my pocket. And then I got down on my knees and I just said, Lord, would you please save me? Well, how did you say it? Well, I said it this way. Okay, let me write that down. And then they write that down, and then they said, then Jesus came by, and then what did you do? I just said, would you please save my son? And then my son was sitting there, and my son looked up, and he looked at Jesus and said, please. And then Jesus touched his foot, and then he was healed. Then the next person said, okay, so this is what I need to do. Mark is so awesome because he doesn't tell you what you're supposed to do. He tells you who Jesus is. I'm just going to apologize on behalf of me and pastors and people. And what happens is we want so desperately, instead of us desperately wanting Jesus, we desperately want to play a part in it. And so you come into a room and you're sitting in church and in a church service and you're sitting in the front row and or in the back row, and you sit in this room and the preacher preaches a sermon and you're sitting there as they're preaching a sermon, and then the Spirit of God's doing something inside of you and the Spirit of God's doing something, and then at the end they sing some song and then lights come down and something cool happens, and then you walk away and you tell your friends, man, this week in church God did something crazy. And they're like, well, what did you do? And the reason why we feel a weight that we're supposed to do something to receive something versus just desperately pursue him. Like, he's the one that's going to heal you, Dave. It's not something you do. He's the one that's going to come into your life. It's not even the way that you pray. It's not the way that you sit. It's not the money you have in your pocket. This isn't about Peter walking on water. This is about the creator of the universe, Jesus, the Son of God, is present in this room, and he knows your name, and he's overwhelmed, and he wants to pour his love out on you, and yet we're still consumed with us. And all he wants us to do is just desperately love him. The thing, I have no do this, do this. Here's your A, B, C, D. I don't got it, but I do have this. It's hard for me even to have intimate. I'm not great at relationships. Ask my wife. I'm really not. But you know what I'm willing to do? I'm willing to just try. And that's the thing with Jesus right now for us in the room. I know you're in this room and you know there's something missing in you. I know it. I know you've got problems. I know you've got hurt. I know your circumstance. I know it. And I'm telling you, just talk to him. Look at him. Open up your Bible and just read the book of Mark. And when you have questions, instead of Googling it, just say, Jesus, what's this? What are you talking about? Hey, family, he's in the boat with you right now. Let's stop talking about what we're doing while he's in the boat. And let's just start talking about him. First off, I love the church. I love all the churches. But I'm sorry that we've treated God like Pavlov's dog. Oh. Man, if you touch this button, God does this. If you say this prayer, God does this. And he wants to pour his affection out on you. And he wants you to pour your affection out on him. And the way it happens is by loving him. So this week, the question is, where are you going to turn? And when you turn, how are you going to spend time with them? The reason why we have someone up here most weeks that talks about how they connect to God is it's all different. That's the cool thing. The cool thing, some of you look at nature, you see God. Some of you read a book, you see God. Some of you see it in people. Some of you see it in songs. Some of you see, but just see him. The image of God is in all of his creation. Even if people don't know they're representing him, listen to me. Anything good in this world is him. Do we believe Jesus is who he says he is? And are we really just willing to pursue him and not make it about us? Remember at the very beginning, we all have circumstances. We're all desperate for healings. But the answer is not a step process. The answer is Jesus.
Yes, the answer is Jesus. Whether you're facing uncertainty, hardship, disappointment, fear, or simply challenges of everyday life, Jesus is present, Jesus is sufficient, and Jesus is with you in the boat. You've been hearing a message by Pastor Jason Epperson of CU Church. And if you missed a portion, want to hear it again, or send it on to a friend, stop by greatnewsradio.org or WLUJ.org and listen anytime under the Mark and Friends tab. May you draw near to Christ this week and discover once again that He is faithful in every circumstance. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.